At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
I'm not trying to put this on Jalen Hurts alone, to be clear, but I think when we look back and, you know, there's been a lot of talk this offseason about Jalen Hurts and his style of leadership and, oh, no one had an issue with it in 2022. Well, my thing with that is, like, maybe there's a time and place to kind of adjust.
The season. Let's go to our friend Brandon Lee Gouton from Bleeding Green Nation joining us now. BLG, welcome to the show, man. Great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, guys.
BLG, buddy, we've been talking about culture because of Kenny Gainwell, the culture-setting nature of this organization. Now, from my perspective, it's like, to me, it's just winning and losing. I hate to boil it down like that. But before we get to this year's team, you still had Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox last year. You still had Lane Johnson and BG. Who's got better leadership than the Philadelphia Eagles last year, even through the collapse on the field, in the locker room? Who's got better leadership? Why does that change? Other than they started losing confidence, from my perspective, does that really have anything to do with the culture?
I think it's relevant. I generally agree with you, John. I think sometimes we use culture hand in hand with winning and losing. And usually, for the most part, I think winning does cure all, but that wasn't the case last year because they were 10-1. And, you know, there's those quotes out there about how they were like the most miserable 10-1 team. And you saw it. They weren't happy when they were winning games by the skin of their teeth. So I think last year kind of was an exception in that regard. And really, I think, you know, Nick Sirianni, and he loves to tout his core values. I think something that he was doing a really good job of prior to last year was kind of having, you know, that connect element and having the culture right and players seemingly having fun. You could just see it. I think, you know, obviously before last year, it looked like the players looked like they liked being there and they were having fun. And last year, even when they were winning, that same element was just not there. It looked like
BLG, I'm glad you brought that up. Because you're right, they were miserable. But that, to me, all circles back to the expectations.
Sure.
The expectations were so enormous that they were like, oh, they won, but, and everybody was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it goes to, oh, these guys all of a sudden became, I don't know, whether you want to call it, worse leaders or they weren't as invested, or they all of a sudden stopped trying to ingratiate the Kenny Gainwells of the world. I don't get that little sort of window, because they were miserable, but that was expectations.
I'm not trying to put this on Jalen Hurts alone, to be clear, but I think when we look back and, you know, there's been a lot of talk this offseason about Jalen Hurts and his style of leadership and, oh, no one had an issue with it in 2022. Well, my thing with that is, like, maybe there's a time and place to kind of adjust. And maybe I think Jalen Hurts' tone in 2022 worked really well because they were a team having a lot of fun and they were good. But I think he was kind of trying to keep everyone grounded at the same time, saying, hey, we left money on the table. We still have a long way to go. I think last year, maybe it was a time to not be like, hey, still money on the table, when things were kind of miserable and maybe kind of needed an element of levity at some point and not so serious and not so rigid. And I think the Eagles themselves kind of stressed that, at least some of the reporting we saw, they wanted Jalen Hurts to have fun, you know, at the Pro Bowl and looked like he was enjoying himself. So, you know, I think there was, again, I'm not putting it on Hurts alone, but I do think collectively there were times last year, and obviously the expectations were part of that in terms of maybe why they weren't able to be so loose. But I don't think they were always as loose as they probably could have been and should have been.
BLG, how much do you put on the coaching staff part of it? I mean, they made the move to fire Desai. They were like 10-3 at the time. They went through a tough gauntlet of games. That might have fractured the locker room. Then you bring in Matt Patricia to call plays. I think that's part of it. But how much do you put on the coaches versus the players. I pointed out to John that the players looked lethargic. NFL Network replayed the wild card loss yesterday, and I begrudgingly sat through the whole thing watching it. It was miserable, but I did it. And they really looked lifeless. But I do think there could be some said about the coaches. And even Kenny Gainwell made a reference to kind of the whole upstairs part of the organization. I don't know how much that's at play, but potentially I think it's something worth listening to. And Kenny, a guy who's inside the locker room, says it.
Or our friend Bo Wolf references this a lot when, you know, they were, I think, interviewing Fletcher Cox at one point during the season. It was actually right before the defensive coordinator change. And Fletcher Cox said something to the effect of, you know, like, you know, we look to the coaches and how they go, we go, in terms of like, if they're panicking, then we're going to panic. And I think where the Eagles season really went wrong was when they just made an unforced error of changing their defensive coordinator. And I was frustrated at that time because I feel like I was one of the few people, even coming off the loss to the Cowboys, saying, hey, this is okay. They lost to the 49ers and the Cowboys. They don't need to panic. Are these bad losses? Absolutely. But now is not the time to panic. They were in a rough stretch there in terms of they're playing on short rest. And, you know, they played an unusual amount of snaps with the overtime game, too, with the Bills. People were tired. I think if they kind of just held firm, they could have gotten back in check there. But they went the wrong route. They panicked. From, you know, a higher level in terms of that defensive coordinator change. And I think the players see that too, and they kind of start to panic a little bit. And that kind of just, you know, sets into the whole locker room and sets the kind of a really bad tone. And I think that's kind of where things started to really go off the rails.
Well, I would say the craziest part was that Nick was first considered moving on from Sean Desai during the bye week.
Yeah.
When there were 8-1. And you think about it, they come out of the bye week, Brandon, beating Kansas City on the road. Granted, again, it wasn't that impressive, but you're still, the fact that you beat Kansas City on the road in nature is impressive. Mm-hmm. And then you beat Buffalo. Obviously, that was a shootout. And they're 10-1. And they're thinking about changing the defensive coordinator, and they did early change it for third downs, giving it to Matt Patricia before they gave him the whole thing. We just talked about expectations from the player perspective. I think the expectations crumbled Nick Sirianni a little bit, at least a little bit, because that's nuts. I can't get over that, BLG.
I look back at, you know, Sean Desai, what he did early last season, and I think we can all agree here, Rams, Cowboys, Dolphins, Chiefs, like pretty good offenses. Yeah. Obviously, the Chiefs Tampa had some struggles.
Early in the season, Tampa.
Yes. All those teams combined scored for just 6 second-half points. Everyone likes to – John, you know this. Everyone loves half-time adjustments. Yeah. Sean Desai was, like, demonstrably really good at that, or at least very lucky in those second halves. And for them to just be like, no, not good enough. After taking, you know, why did you hire him in the first place? You know, you knew Sean Desai is not like, you know, this kind of day one finished product. You know, he wasn't super experienced. Why would we even hire him if you're not going to give him a fair shake? And then, okay, if you're going to replace him, I don't like it. But if you're going to replace him because it feels so good about that option you're turning to, fine. Like, I don't love it, but okay. But it's Matt Patricia. Come on. Like, that's just, it's not a serious move. Hiring him was, no one was on board with that. No one thought that was a good idea, a great idea. God. So, that's just not something, unserious is the word that I feel like is the perfect word to describe that.
Yeah, the option they went to, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, it's one thing if you're going to a great, but he was a guy that was highly criticized before. He was highly criticized by really your leader of the defense and Darius Slay patched that all up. But is there anything to Darius Slay sat out, you know, at the end of the season there. I know he had the procedure, but maybe could have waited till the end of the year. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. And then, then you tax on to the culture conversation.
Boy, it's crazy. If you go all the way back, BLG, when they hired Matt Patricia, all of a sudden – we're sitting in the media house. I don't know if you were there.
I wasn't there, but I remember this day. Yeah.
Yeah. We're sitting there, and all of a sudden he pops up on the website, the Eagles website, because, you know, Eagles like to break everything on Twitter, X nowadays. And we just happen to be looking at something, and all of a sudden there's Matt Patricia. And I immediately text one of the Eagles PR people that Brandon knows. And I said, Patricia Bischel, confirm. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, he's on the website. They didn't know. They didn't want to. Yep. It was just the weirdest thing. And I didn't think much of it at the time, other than intern, whatever, probably jumped the gun. And they were still working out the deal. But boy, in hindsight, it's like, that was such a weird hire. Such a weird, because of Slay, because of their history.
Right.
It's just crazy. But Howie and Jeffrey, for people that don't know, love Robert Kraft, love the Patriots organization, love Bill Belichick, wanted to hire Josh McDaniels. Well, Howie did. They loved that organization, and Matt was obviously a part of it.
Yeah, that was wild. They also, like you said, kind of like they didn't want to stand by it necessarily. At least for, like, they weren't like, you know, puffing their chest. We hired Matt Patricia. We're so proud of this, because they know, right? They know at some level that's not like the best PR kind of thing. But it's just like, yeah, why make that move? What is the best case scenario here? And like, what is the worst case scenario?
We saw the worst case.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
BLG, let's move into Howie Roseman joined WIP yesterday. You put out some good tweets, kind of typing out what he was saying. The one thing that stood out to me was the comment on Jeremiah Trotter Jr. comping him to TJ Edwards. John kind of disputed what I was thinking about it, but I mean, you let TJ walk. He's an undrafted guy, and then you draft a guy and you comp his instincts to him. And did you take anything away from that like I did, or am I thinking too much into it?
Well, obviously, you know, there's couching in there too. You know, Howie doesn't want to set unfair, unrealistic expectations for Jeremiah Trotter Jr. from the jump. He did say, you know, like, you know, not one for one, but kind of in that mold of a player. And I think it makes sense. I think that's kind of what Trotter Jr. has been talked about as a guy who might not have it from the athleticism testing and quite like the physical measurements standpoint, but can kind of make up for that a bit with his football IQ and instincts. And obviously you see that in his track record production stats wise at Clemson. I think he's kind of just trying to, you know, paint him in that mold of a player, which really speaks to me that, you know, I think this makes sense. And it's kind of obvious that I think Trotter Jr. is going to be competing for kind of like that N'Kobe Dean role in the defense.
Really? You think more than Devin White? Jeremiah Trotter, N'Kobe Dean is where he's going to push.
I do. I think, you know, obviously, you know, White had an uneven end to the season last year, and uneven here, meaning he got benched basically, didn't even play much in that Lions playoff game. But ultimately, I think, you know, you have a linebacker stylistically in Devin White, who's going to be more of like kind of a splash guy and might not necessarily be, you know, the mic or whatever, and making calls and whatnot. And I think, you know, N'Kobe Dean kind of gives you more of that, in theory, that safer mold. And I think
what about Trotter at Mike and N'Kobe moving over to Will? Is that a possibility?
I think possible, but I guess also maybe like worried about the size concerns there of the both of them in there. And also just from a standpoint of like the way I've been framing it with Trotter Jr. is if he makes plays in training camp this year, you know, this summer as a rookie, that'll be more than we've seen out of N'Kobe Dean in multiple years to this point. Like,
yeah, well, that's true.
So yeah. I just really don't think there's like a high bar, at least there shouldn't be, in terms of what N'Kobe Dean has done or really hasn't done since he's gotten here.
Yeah, and I don't want to hype up fifth round picks too much, but Johnny Mack is putting this down on Birds 365 a lot. There is a path for the linebackers just because of who they have on the roster. I mean, fifth round pick or not, there's a path to playing time because of the lack of talent at the position on the roster.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, that's a big factor. You know, it's who else are you really excited about? Oren Burks, you know, more of a special teams guy. Maybe Ben Van Sumeren kind of comes on. Maybe he's like your Reed Blankenship, you know, a player who last year at this time, I don't think anyone was expecting Reed Blankenship to just full-on run away with the starting safety job. I think people, you know, liked what they saw out of him as a rookie for sure, but barring that, you know, I think Trotter has a real chance to come in here and, you know, I'm not going to say be his dad from day one, but be a legitimate contributor.
Boy, the fifth round picks as a whole, BLG, I don't know how much feedback you're getting over at Bleeding Green, but people are hyped up about these guys. Mm. Anaya Smith, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., Trevor Keegan. I got a lot of people saying he's going to battle Tyler Steen for the starting right guard spot. We had Mike Gill on. He had an interesting take on that I hadn't thought of. Going back to the Super Bowl team, you remember what happened that year. It was Isaac, and Isaac struggled, and then they went to Chance Warmack for a while, and then they ended up on Stephen Wisniewski, who was sort of that old grizzled veteran, not that, you know, at that point, not the most talented guy in the world. Matt Hennessy, are we just, you know, there's injury concerns, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's got to be healthy. But if he's healthy, he's much younger than Wiz, so that's a little bit. But he was an ascending player in Atlanta. I mean, is there, he might be their best option at right guard after not being able to get sort of that thread the needle in the draft with somebody who could start at right guard, eventually move out to tackle.
You mentioned Warmack and Wiz there. I mean, they were rotating at one point, which is wild, bizarre, especially after you bench a player, not even bench a player for a guy that you like, just for a rotation. I mean, I think Hennessy definitely factors in there. That right guard spot, I would not say is tight.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Their Steens, 100%. You know, based on what we saw in training camp last year, and I've kind of, maybe I sound like a broken record with this, but like, I thought Tyler Steen looked really good at tackle and didn't.
So do I. I think he's a tackle. I think he's better. Yeah.
That's what I'm wondering, John. Like, is he just a tackle? Is he not a guard? And, you know, I think let's see after a full off season, maybe, of being able to have more time there in transition. And I just think it's a little kind of unfair to Tyler Steen. Like, you know, he didn't play a lot last year, but I don't think he's a bad player by any means. Again, like you said, we both saw him flash at tackle. And so then maybe that's where he ends up, and maybe it's Hennessy at guard. But very interested to see Steen this offseason.
Yeah, it's interesting because we had Ed Kratz on yesterday who explained it as when you're a tackle, you have all that room to work. And when you're a guard, you're almost working inside of a phone booth. It's a tough switch. That's where, you know, a lot of people have talked about maybe Mekhi Becton going inside. I just don't see it with how big of a player he is, and he's played tackle his entire life. It's a tough switch to make go inside of right guard.
Yeah, and also, like, okay, you do that, but, like, who's your swing tackle? If he's playing in a guard, like, that's, you know, for
Tyler, I guess it would be Steen.
Steen, if you feel confident about that, sure. But, yeah, I mean, I think they want to give Becton a look at tackle first before you start kind of messing around.
Well, he's got to prove himself at tackle first. I think people forget that. He's got, obviously, a lot of talent, and hopefully it works out. And I think, But, you know, I did – when I first heard Mekhi Becton to guard, or somebody threw that out, I think it was Mosh who did it first. I immediately said, nah, come on, dude blocks out the sun. And then I'm thinking, well, you know, Landon's 6'6", you know, Tyler's 6'5". We got all these giant guards anyway. What's two more inches? You got Lane outside at 6'6". You got Jordan at 6'8". Yeah, Jalen's never going to be able to see Anaya Smith, but that's just part of it.
Man. Yeah, I think it's kind of a matter of that's something they would do. I mean, just the ceiling of Mekhi Becton working out at tackle is so much better, you know, than him working out at guard. Other than, you know, maybe in the short term, sure. But long term, I think that's something they're still very much interested in seeing how that would work before they would move him inside.
How long do you guys think Lane Johnson has left?
We signed through what, 2026, I believe. So
yeah.
Under contract to then. And he said, what, last year or so, he wants to play for a few more years.
Yeah.
But
if you know, what it's worth, when he was on the Jacob postgame show, not last year, but 2 years ago, he did say, I want to play out my contract.
He changes, though. He
sure.
Changes,
but
yeah.
You know, there's a, I think, a year-to-year kind of thing, especially seeing Jason Peters go through that, although he's still playing, and Jason Kelce going through that. I think, you know, being around that kind of makes you want to evaluate it on a yearly basis. And
well, the reason I ask is I think Mekhi would potentially, I mean, with a couple years of schooling, obviously I'm hoping for the best because he hasn't quite lived up to that when he was in New York, but with a couple years of Stoutland U schooling, maybe he could be the guy that fills Lane Johnson's shoes when Lane decides to hang it up. But it's far fetched, right? It's a year.
Sure.
You know how long?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. If they were able to do that in the draft, they got the guy locked in for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Mekhi, it's a 1 year deal, and if people even get a hint, Brandon, that he can play.
They're going to get him the bag. Yeah.
And that's why he signed here, because he wants to rehab his value, hit free agency next year, and probably try to find a starting job somewhere.
Yeah. Which is smart for him getting in with Jeff Stoutland. So hopefully it works out from the Eagles' perspective. We're talking about offense. It's kind of list season. And there's one list Xander broke out about top offenses, and the Eagles were 8th or 9th. I'm not really interested in that, but it did bring up the question to me, BLG, what's the floor of this offense? Mm. Like, what could you imagine essentially the worst case? And not Jalen Hurts getting injured. That would be the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. But if he's healthy playing, what's the floor for this offense?
Mm. I think it would be something similar to last year in terms of, like, you know, the talent's there. That's just not questionable. It's at least from a skill player perspective. There's some questions, as we kind of talked about here, on the offensive line, what that looks like exactly. Obviously, you have a new play caller coming in. But I just think the floor is that, you know, they kind of just underperform their talent level a little bit, where, you know, I think the ceiling is sky high, because if they can get this to click and we see Hurts that looks a little bit more like the 2022 version of him than the 2023 version, that's obviously high. But yeah, I think the floor is similar to what we saw last year, just kind of frustrating, not maximizing what you have.
Yeah, that's where I think it's interesting with the coordinators, because you look at all this talent on the offense versus the defense. Vic Fangio is going to make progress on the defense. He is going to – it's because it's not that hard. They didn't have a great defense last year. They didn't have a great passing defense last year. But Kellen, you know, he's coming in here. Fans are expecting a much more high-powered offense than they had last year. And they were – what were they, John, 8th?
Yeah, 8th overall. Yeah.
I mean, that's tough. It's tough to go up from 8th to top 5 when you got teams like the Niners and the Lions and the Cowboys – you know, who are in front of you. It's tough to make that jump. And I think that, John, you always talk about this, how expectations are tough. The expectations might be really high for that offense, which could bring some pressure on Kellen Moore.
I mean, yeah, setting it from the Eagles standard, their expectations are very high because
they pay all those guys. Yeah. They should be high and have high expectations.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The coaching staff, it can't be the same situation where, okay, we're not getting the most out of what we have. They have to. And that's my, you know, kind of my big contention with Sirianni as a whole. Like, you know, at a very simple level, I think the best coaches get more out of less. And I don't think we've really seen evidence of him doing that. And now, you know, obviously you bring in a new play caller. A lot of that's on Kellen Moore, but also at a very, you know, high level, it's also on him.
Well, let's talk about Nick. An old friend just tweeted something funny. It was tweeting about Kenny Gainwell shedding light on the team's internal struggles. Mm-hmm. And our buddy Eitan Shander said, the head coach was an absolute bozo, lost control of everything. Is the head coach, is this a head coach thing? Is this all of this? I mean, Randy Mueller, because I was defending Nick down the stretch last season. I thought it was insane. I say it all the time. When I was flying down to Tampa, I said, no way this guy's getting fired. That's absurd. And then they played the game, and I was like, All right, maybe he's getting fired. I mean, that was freaking embarrassing, as one of the Eagles execs said. And I started, and Randy said, it's your job as the head coach, boiling it down, is to fix things. Mm-hmm. He couldn't fix anything, which I think was very fair. Is this the head coach? Is this all issues with the head coach?
I think the issue with the head coach ultimately is, you know, how does he give this team an edge? What does he take about this like constituted roster and then make them even a little bit better on top of that? I think that was the problem and a big reason why I was struggling to see, you know, like the merit to keeping him. Not, cause I don't really care. Maybe it sounds harsh, but you know, not for long NFL. Like, it's not just about what you've done. It's about what you can do moving forward. What is the vision? What is the plan? What is the, you know, path to getting better? And I think with Nick, you know, like, I think you can say one of the things he has done good in the past is like, was that culture element that I just gave him credit for at the top of the show. And I just jumped on here. And you know, that kind of went to heck last year by the end of last year. So yeah. I don't know what he is really bringing. And that was like kind of my biggest challenge to the people defending him. Like, what, and not just in a way where I'm saying I'm genuinely want to know what we think Nick Sirianni brings to the table that gives his team an edge over other teams. I by the end of last year, I was struggling to see that.
Is it fair to say the edge is more for the front office than it is for the players? Look, we all know when Doug Peterson put his foot down and said, I want this guy to be my coordinator, you could argue whether it was the right coordinator pick or not. The Eagles were done with him. They didn't want him anymore. And then they hire Nick, who's a little bit more of a yes man to them. Is that it? Is that why they kept him around? Is it fair to assume that or think that?
I don't think it's totally unrelated. I mean, you know, I think one of the biggest proponents of Nick's keeping his job was Howie and not bringing in, let's say, Bill Belichick, who certainly might have a different power structure if that were to happen. So, you know, I think that's a relevant factor. But again, ultimately, like, I don't think Nick just should get credit for being just going on board with whatever the front office wants. You know, again, at some level, he has to give this team an edge. And look, I think he's done a good job relatively of being aggressive when you look at the numbers, fourth down, all that analytically wise. And I guess that kind of goes into part of being, you know, willing to hear ideas. But even then, I think situationally those numbers lie a little bit, because obviously, you know, you have the tush push baked in there of why they're going for it so much on fourth down. But there were spots, you know, like I look back at that sequence against the Cardinals late in the game where there's the play calling is so conservative and they're not even trying to go for a first down and third and long at that point. And kind of just ignoring the context of the game about how they can't get a stop on defense and thinking a field goal is possibly going to playing for the field goal, I would say, in that situation. So I don't think he's really aggressive as he needs to be.
At Brandon Galton, make sure you follow BLG on X. Does a tremendous job, editor in chief, Bleeding Green Nation. Always check out every morning. Go to Bleeding Green Nation for your latest Eagles news. And one thing that broke yesterday, BLG, I'll end it here with you. Brandon Hunt, the Eagles director of scouting, interviewing for the Patriots. They don't have a GM. We'll see what title they use, but we'll use de facto GM. So, you know, Brand is a very smart guy, very sharp guy. I think we all looked at Jeffrey Lurie a couple of years ago when he threw that quote out there. There's like five or whatever he said, the future GMs in the building. We all rolled our eyes. You're right. Everybody wants what the Eagles have. In the case of Brandon, and I always say, it's just, by and large, it is great. The Eagles have an advantage over the rest of the league with their continuity with Howie Roseman. But the unintended consequence of that is guys know there's a ceiling here. So if they want to be a GM, they got to leave. There's no way you can fix that, right? It's just you got to keep repopulating.
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know, with like your coaching staff, right? That's why I always say, like, I don't have interest in, oh, they should have kept Shane Steichen. You can't keep Shane Steichen. If the Colts want to hire him as their head coach, their head coach, he's gone. You can't do anything about it. You can offer him a head coach salary to stay. It's probably not going to happen. It's also, he wants to be a head coach, so he's going to leave. So, you know, I think that's it's a good problem to have when teams think you're doing something right. and want a piece of that as opposed to the other way around, and you're able to keep all your guys because you stink. So yeah, I think true. It's something you just have to live with.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, I like that thought. I always say with Doug Peterson, one of the criticisms you probably heard with Doug, BLG, was that when it came to his assistant coaches, he didn't know people around the league because he only coached with Andy. Why would you leave Andy? What do you want him to go with a bunch of losers? Oh, Andy, I gotta leave to coach with a bunch of guys who are going to get fired. So I have a bigger ecosystem of coaches. Never made any sense to me. And that's similar here. You can't keep guys. You're getting head coaching job, GM jobs. They're leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Makes sense. BLG, thanks for joining the show. I do want to close with one more thing for you. The cornerback, all the defensive backs, it's all of a sudden a crowded room. What's your early BLG prediction? Who's in, who's out? Is James Bradbury as good as gone? What's going on? What's going on at the defensive back room?
I mean, I'm guessing, you know, where's even the room for James Bradbury at this point? Yeah. you get Isaiah Rodgers back, you bring in two, you know, top cornerbacks in the draft. I would guess he's going to be gone after June 1st. And then obviously Slay is starting, and then across from him, I think it's a competition. I mean, obviously Quinyon Mitchell would seem to be in the driver's seat for that as their first round pick, but I mean, Keely Ringo had a nice end to the season, I think, for the most part last year. I think he's not going to just go away quietly. What if Cooper DeJean, who the Eagles really wanted, clearly by all indications,
Jeffrey Lurie wanted him. We saw that on scripted.
Yeah. I know, you know, Mitchell's drafted higher than him, but if DeJean balls out in training camp, well, I mean, you know, he's going to make a case for that job. So I don't think by any means anyone across from Darius Slay has it locked down just yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how it all shakes out. One of the interesting spots I think everybody will be keeping their eye on heading into training camp. BLG, thanks for joining the show, man. You're great. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Brandon.
That's BLG joining Birds 365. Another good episode today, just about in the rearview mirror. May 8th edition, Wednesday edition of Birds 365. Let me get our like count real quick. I want to remind everybody. 140. Let's get 10 more likes before we end the show. We'll get to that 150 number. Pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff from both Mike Gill in hour one, and as you just saw, BLG in hour two. A little feisty today. A feisty show today, debating the culture and everything, so it's all good, but good to have the conversation. Good to break it all down. Johnny Mac and I will come back. We'll put a wrap on this Wednesday edition of Birds 365 and preview what comes next. What's up next on Thursday's edition and Friday's edition of Birds 365. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Stay tuned, and we'll wrap up the show next.
If you missed any of today's show on the Jacob Media channel, listen to the podcast on your way home. Available on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.